Good morning. May it please the court. My name is John Archigo. I'm here representing appellant AJB. This matter is back before the court after a remand from the Minnesota Supreme Court in an opinion issued in July of 2019. The Supreme Court remanded the case back to Scott County District Court to address an issue from the Supreme Court where they gave us a new interpretation of the harassment statute that's at issue.
What do you think the remand instructions were exactly?
Well, as the Supreme Court noted in its opinion, it did not reach the as-applied challenge that we had raised on appeal. It reserved judgment on that issue and remanded to the district court because it gave a new interpretation of the harassment statute.
Well, so looking at their opinion, mm-hmm. I'm not sure that I agree with you, and tell me why I'm wrong, because they say they severed the two offending descriptions and said the juvenile court must now determine based on the record before it whether AJB's adjudication of delinquency for male harassment can stand under the statute as narrowed. And they narrowed the statute to say with the intent to abuse.
Right. And footnote 12, Your Honor.
Footnote 12. I mean, the district court apparently considered your argument.
It didn't. On remand?
Yes.
It didn't. Its opinion essentially rubber-stamped its former opinion following a court trial and specifically noted that it was not addressing any of our...
Because I think it had interpreted the Supreme Court's decision to say, just see if these acts by your client were done with the intent to abuse, is how I would have read it as a district court judge, the remand.
So it's my position, Your Honor, that our as-applied challenge was never addressed at the Supreme Court. Their footnote that we just mentioned there said that they noted we had raised that issue. They did not reach that issue for whatever reason, felt it needed to go back to the district court, maybe for final determination under the new statute. If for some reason the district court felt there wasn't enough evidence to convict under the new statute, it would have put an end to the case. So the Supreme Court remanded back to address that issue. And my interpretation of it is to get that settled before it's going to address any additional appellate issues that it did not address in its opinion. And the district court did not take up any of these issues, just flat out ignored it, refused to address any of the issues that we raised on remand. And if that's true, Your Honor, then essentially we've raised an appellate issue that is never getting addressed. And I don't believe that that's sort of fair to the appellant or fair to us. If we had properly raised appellate issues that have not been decided.
So are you, I just want to understand the scope of your argument. Are you making any sufficiency of the evidence arguments?
We are, Your Honor. In the brief, we raised the issue that these are public tweets that are at issue here, and public tweets don't constitute a letter, telegram, or package. And that is specifically addressed in our brief in section, that starts on page 22 of the appellate's brief. A public tweet, even one that mentions another Twitter user, is not a letter, telegram, or package. And we went through an argument, through an analysis where we raised several examples in the Supreme Court's opinion that really stressed that the statute has to be limited to a physical piece of mail. It has to be limited to a letter, telegram, or package. It cannot be applied. The statute, even as it's been redefined, cannot be applied to public statements.
How do you interpret, in light of that argument, how do you interpret the Supreme Court's footnote 7 then, which says we observe that the nature of the acts covered by subdivision 1-3, mailing or delivering, and the items to be delivered, letters, telegrams, packages, suggests that the statute prescribes only direct personal contacts between However, the parties take the position that the statute also applies to tweets. They seem to have dealt with that.
And as I mentioned again in my brief, Your Honor, that's not a characterization that I agree with even remotely. We've been challenging.
So you don't agree with the Supreme Court's footnote 7, or what don't you agree with?
That they sort of assigned to us an implicit agreement that a tweet is the same as a letter, telegram, or package.
Well, I would be loath to disagree with the Supreme Court.
Well, that...
I mean, as a court of appeals.
Well, I understand, Your Honor. I'm saying I didn't necessarily... I don't agree with that portion of it, and I'd be happy to go back there and sort of have that conversation, but I don't think that that was a fair characterization of our position. We've raised these issues in district court. It's been our position from the very beginning that these were public statements. To say that we're sort of agreeing that it constitutes a letter, telegram, or package when we've raised not only challenges, facial challenges to the statutes themselves, but also as applied challenges, I don't think is a fair or accurate characterization. And my recollection is that this issue wasn't one that was addressed during oral argument. We focused largely on the facial challenges to the statute.
Could I just ask you this? So, looking at the Supreme Court opinion here, there was a dissent, and the dissent basically said there should be no remand of any kind back to the district court, and we, based on this record, we can decide this case. Is that a fair characterization of the dissent?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, if that's the case, I mean, apparently the dissent, and there's three justices that joined that dissent, obviously thought that the majority opinion took care of all the issues except for the sufficiency of the evidence issue. So, don't we have to look at that at least the dissent is viewing this as a complete decision relative to this case? This was a very narrow remand?
I don't know that the dissenting opinion carries any sort of presidential value, I guess, in that respect. And it would still be my position that the majority opinion did not address the as-applied challenge. Nowhere in its opinion did it address the as-applied challenge at all. They specifically said we don't reach the issue.
Can we return to Judge Riley's question about whether the sufficiency of the evidence was actually preserved, the question of whether the statute actually applies to this instead of a letter or package? I read Judge Werke's opinion from our court as indicating that that issue was not before either us or the Supreme Court. Am I wrong? It seems like it was just strictly the constitutional argument.
Are you talking on the first time that this matter was before the Court of Appeals?
Correct.
Right. It was challenges to the facial. Yeah, they were constitutional challenges, facial and as applied.
The question of whether the statute applies to this sort of conduct does not seem to have been raised.
And I guess I would disagree. The fact that we made the as-applied challenges, we're arguing that these are public statements or public tweets. You can't apply. Obviously, protected speech has been our position from the beginning. So I feel that we have addressed the argument that these are not letters, telegrams, or packages that are being sent to an individual. These are public statements.
Was that issue raised to this court and to the Supreme Court as an issue in the case?
I believe the as-applied challenges covers that argument.
So you believe it's subsumed within your constitutional argument?
Yes, I do. Yep. And I guess that's where I sort of keep coming back. I understand that the respondent feels that the issue was addressed at the Supreme Court or a remand, but I don't see an opinion. I don't see anybody addressing the as-applied challenge and giving us an opinion on the arguments that we raised that these tweets constituted public speech. And in order to punish the appellant for public speech, you need to find that it falls under some sort of recognized exception. We don't have an opinion addressing that whatsoever. And if we're not going to, then if we're just going to assume that back on remand, we just had this extremely narrow issue to determine whether there's sufficient evidence under the new statute and completely ignore the public statement, public forum.
But getting back to footnote 7, the court said, AJB, however, and you disagree with this, but this is what the court says, however, does not challenge the state's implicit characterization of a tweet as a letter, telegram, or package. Accordingly, we do not reach that issue. Further, we assume for purposes of this decision that the statute is not limited to direct person-to-person conduct.
I understand that that's what the court is saying, Your Honor.
That's the law of the case.
I understand that that's what the Supreme Court is saying in that footnote. My position remains that we do not have an opinion from them on the as-applied challenge. So if they're going to sort of say that we're agreeing implicitly, or we're not sort of using the very explicit words that a tweet is not a letter, telegram, or package, to me, still ignores the as-applied challenge that was properly raised that they did not rule on.
Well, but getting back to the sufficiency of the evidence argument, you initially said that because letters, telegrams, packages, tweets are public, or the tweets are public in nature, that would go to your sufficiency of the evidence argument. But it seems like under the law of the case in footnote 7, you're left with they didn't address as applied.
I'm not sure I'm following, Your Honor. Yeah, I mean, that's...
I mean, I think that is your sole argument, then, on appeal.
Is the as-applied is still an issue that needs to be decided?
Yes.
Right.
But not the sufficiency of the evidence.
We raised it in our brief, Your Honor, because I obviously expected that to be the respondent's position. So I feel that I did mention that in our brief. And as I indicated to Judge Rodenberg, that I feel that our as-applied challenges encompasses whether or not a public tweet is the same thing as a letter, telegram, or package for the purposes of this statute. And I guess the way that I see it is if this matter is remanded under the issue of whether there's just simply sufficient evidence in the record to convict under the new narrowed interpretation, then to me that still leaves the as-applied challenge without any type of an opinion anywhere from the Supreme Court in this matter. It's still an issue that was raised and that just it has not been addressed. We don't have an opinion from the Supreme Court indicating whether these were public statements that can be prosecuted in this case. And that's the issue that I feel wasn't addressed, and that's why I've dragged this case back here.
Why we're here again. I understand.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure I was clear on your argument.
Yep. So.
Any other questions?
I have none.
Okay. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Todd Zettler. I represent respondent, state of Minnesota. The court's obviously clear on what the issues are. Footnote 7 and footnote 12 address the issues. The reason that there wasn't a more specific as applied ruling is, as footnote 12 indicates, there was three possibilities. If it's this one, it's unconstitutional. If it's this one, it's unconstitutional. But if it's this one, it's constitutional. And they never raised the issue of a tweet not fitting within the definition of the statute.
It wasn't addressed by Judge Werke's opinion out of this court. So it seems like maybe footnote 7, the way I interpret footnote 7, is maybe indicating not that they agreed to it, but it wasn't an issue that had been addressed by the district court or this court.
And that it was the law of the case now. So I understand appellant disagrees with the Supreme Court, but that's for the Supreme Court. Unless the court has any specific additional questions.
I do have some questions. Like Judge Riley, I am loath to disagree with the Supreme Court, but I am willing to confess that I am mystified by where we're at this point. If the Supreme Court was really saying that the way it narrowed the statute, there can't be an as-applied challenge, is that your interpretation?
No, I think that the Supreme Court was saying under the facts of this case, if it is an as-applied challenge under the facts of this case, and if it meets that third, if it meets the narrow definition,
the definition provided at the end, that is that
To abuse.
To abuse the use of insulting or hurtful words with the primary aim of causing mental, physical, emotional harm, then it can't be an as-applied challenge?
No, then it wouldn't be unconstitutional. It wouldn't violate the First Amendment.
Okay, it wouldn't be unconstitutional as applied based on how they narrowed it.
Correct.
But then why didn't the, okay, but here's where my confusion arises. If that's true, then why do we have three dissenting justices saying there's no need for a remand when the majority remands it? And it seems like the dissent anticipated we'd be having this discussion right now.
And I think the reason the majority, well, and I obviously agree with the dissent, but the reason the majority, I think, did that was because in prior, well, because it was in the disjunctive. So it's possible that the district court would have found under one of the unconstitutional provisions and not the narrowed constitutional provision. And had that been the case, it would be unconstitutional as applied in this case. But the district court didn't. On remand, the district court found that, no, it's the intent to abuse.
No one's surprised.
Well, and the dissent currently obviously agrees with that. So no, it wasn't a surprise based upon the overwhelming evidence in the case. The intent to abuse was quite clear.
Well, could I ask you, do you agree that the majority did not deal with the as-applied issue?
No, I think that it was dealt with by the narrowing of the statute and remanding to say, on the facts of this case, what is it? Because if it's under one of the two unconstitutional provisions, then as applied, it's unconstitutional. However, if it's under the narrowed provision, then it's constitutional.
So you think it's an implicit dealing with the as applied challenge?
Well, I think it's explicit. I think that's what they said. I mean, they said they weren't addressing the as-applied because of the narrowed provision. So they're remanding for the district court to make specific which of the previously disjunctive findings it had convicted under. And Judge King clarified that she had indeed done under intent to abuse. I see the court is not entirely comfortable with that, but
well, I'll say this: had the Supreme Court said what you're saying now, then I would feel fairly comfortable affirming what happened here. But I'm not totally convinced that that's what they were doing.
Well, and could it be that the Supreme Court said, well, I mean, and again, we're kind of trying to figure out what this majority opinion covered. But could it be that they sent it back to see if they even have enough, number one, if it even falls under the facially correct version of the statute, and then if it's sufficient under that, if that's what the decision was, then maybe counsel is right. Then that brings up the as applied challenge.
But they would not have then said you have to do it on the same evidence. We're not opening it up for any additional evidence. So the court is simply being remanded to decide on the facts of this case. Does it meet the narrowed statute? That's what the remand was for. That's what the district court did.
And if your argument is if the answer to that was yes, it meets the definition.
Then it is both facially and as applied.
You can make an as applied challenge, but it's going to fail.
It's already correct.
It seems like they might have just said that.
I wish they would have.
So do I.
But I think if you look at, obviously the concurring dissenting justices aren't precedential authority, but they were certainly clear in what they thought was happening and should happen in this case.
But the fact that there were four justices who thought otherwise is troubling.
Well, not if you're looking, I think, at the possibility, I think it was a long shot, but the possibility that the district court had found solely under one of the now unconstitutional provisions. If the district court had not found intent to abuse, if it had been one of the other two, then it would be unconstitutional, both facially and as applied.
I understand your argument.
But, and again, maybe you can help me deal with this issue. You know, a lot of times, in order to reach the constitutional issue, sometimes you have to figure out if they even, if there's enough information or if the court, the district court, had decided that under the statute as it was written, whether factually it met that the elements of the statute. And only then you reach the constitutional argument. Could that have been the thought process of the majority? I guess, why, is there anything in that opinion that would indicate that that was not the thinking, even though they didn't say one way or another?
I'm not sure if I understand the question, that they would remand for a finding as to whether the statute,
whether the district court had actually decided it as an intent to abuse case. And then if that was in fact what the court had decided, the district court, then at that point that is the trigger for the constitutional analysis, the as-applied analysis.
Then I don't know why they wouldn't have just found the whole thing facially unconstitutional. And it doesn't seem like they would have carved out an exception and remanded.
No, except their analysis only dealt with the facial challenge, not the as-applied challenge, right? Am I correct? I mean, I'm looking for a way to analyze that majority opinion.
I think
in light of the principles that we do recognize and apply all the time.
And I think from footnote 12, what I take from footnote 12 is that it was not addressing the facial as applied because it would be necessarily decided based upon how the case came out with the district court as to whether it was under the constitution, the now constitutional or the now unconstitutional provisions.
So as narrowed, you think the Supreme Court held that there is no as-applied constitutional, there's no available as-applied constitutional challenge to repeatedly delivering by electronic means tweets with the intent to abuse another through insulting or hurtful words.
I don't know if it would be, that's the general rule for everyone, but I think that that would be the rule in this case.
It seems like there's an awful lot of crimes being committed from what the little bit I know about tweeting, and it's precious little, that qualifies under the words that I just read.
And they
that's almost why Twitter exists.
So if there is a separate case, separate defendant, charged under the now constitutional provision, they're free to challenge the statute as applied to their facts. But in this case, because the Supreme Court had all the facts before it and found the statute both constitutional and unconstitutional in part, a remand for the facts to decide whether it meets the statute necessarily decided, I think, as applied as well as the facial. And I think that's what footnote 12 indicates.
You can understand why we're struggling with the remand. We remand to the juvenile court for consideration of AJB's adjudication under Minnesota statute as narrowed.
I do, but if you read directly above that, it talks about what the statute is, and directly above that is footnote 12. Indicating the narrowed nature of the remand. And I think that you can look at what the concurrence dissent stated and get some insight into the court's thinking in its decision, the majority opinion. It's not precedential, but I think it does give the court some insight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any rebuttal?
Yeah, just quickly, Your Honor. The court remanded because they were addressing the facial constitutional challenges of this harassment statute. And they declared it was facially overbroad, facially unconstitutional. They severed two phrases and remanded to district court because my client had been convicted under a facially unconstitutional statute. So it remanded to get some guidance, some clarity, I guess, from the district court to tell us, are you convicting him under intent to abuse? You got to decide that first before you're going to reach the as-applied challenge. That's why the Supreme Court remanded, to clear up that issue. The district court didn't entertain any of these arguments on remand. They convicted under intent to abuse, but it still leaves the as-applied challenge unanswered. And if we're going to take the position that we got to wait for somebody else to get charged and now they can launch an as-applied challenge, well, why can't AJB? Then he never, ever is going to have that defense that he properly raised adjudicated and answered.
And why are you claiming that under the intent to abuse that this is unconstitutional as applied to your client?
Because these are public statements made in a public forum that don't fall into any recognized First Amendment exception.
But if as Judge Rodenberg has indicated, it wasn't dealt with before, is that forfeited?
I'm sorry, what for, the as-applied challenge?
No, the tweets being public.
That issue's been raised, Your Honor.
The question of whether they qualify under the statute.
I'm not following, I guess.
Let me take a run at it.
Sure.
If public tweets don't qualify as a letter package or whatever, then you would never reach either facial or as applied constitutional challenge because you just didn't qualify under the statute, right?
Yeah.
So if the only issues you've raised are facial and as applied challenges, then there is sort of an implicit, if not agreement, then at least forfeiture of a challenge as to whether the tweet falls within letter or package.
I mean, if that's going to be, I guess, the conclusion or the analysis, then I guess I'm forced to agree with that, but I necessarily don't.
I'm not trying to force you to agree with me. I'm just trying to figure out how I get out of that sort of intellectual box. If you're making challenges that the statute as applied here is unconstitutional, then the statute has to, by its terms, apply here.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, Your Honor. We're arguing that they're using a statute to punish what is essentially public speech. So we don't need to say that whatever the expressive activity or conduct or speech falls under the statute. We're just saying the state's using this to prosecute this speech, this activity, and they can't do that. That's been our...
You would agree with me that there's an awful lot of tweeting that qualifies as repeatedly delivering by electronic means messages in public with the intent to abuse. There's an awful lot of that.
Our president does it on a daily basis.
That's kind of one of the people I'm thinking of.
Right.
A whole bunch of other people too.
Right.
Everybody who doesn't like the Houston Astros.
I mean, absolutely. That's that. Like Your Honor said, that's Twitter. That's social media, and we're going to apply this statute to tweets, to retweets, to people who share tweets, to people who share Facebook messages.
And they seem to get repeated over and over and over and over again.
Thousands of times. I mean, I don't understand how we're going to start to prosecute this stuff, how we're going to use a statute like this.
Anyone has Twitter, but...
to prosecute these instances. I mean, plenty of courts have recognized the serial as-applied challenges that would stem from this theory of prosecution.
Well, what arguments are you making, though, in your as-applied challenge that you didn't make with regard to your facial challenge?
That it's public statements made in a public forum. And the facial challenge, Your Honor, just goes to the overbreadth of the statute and obviously how it's substantially overbroad and stands to criminalize a bunch of different activity. the as-applied focuses on how I've characterized, how several courts, federal courts, have characterized Twitter being today's modern square, public square, public forum.
They're like newspapers or newsletters.
They are.
But wasn't that an argument you made as part of your facial challenge, or at least the court dealt with that in footnote 7?
It wasn't limited to that. It was encompassed, I guess, under it as sort of an example for why the statutes, why the language was substantially overbroad.
Well, the Supreme Court focused on, we now have made this a specific intent crime, or clarified that it's a specific intent crime. How does that impact your analysis?
I mean, I don't know that it does, and I, separate, I guess, but I, you could probably imagine I take issue with their sort of opinion anyway and the narrowed statute. In my opinion, they're sort of legislating a new sort of unprotected category of speech, which the court just doesn't have authority to do. So,
and,
I know we're,
by it.
Yeah,
we're
I understand. Yep. We certainly are. Yeah. But I know we're going in circles, but I just come back to there's plenty of support that Twitter is a public forum. These are statements received in a public forum. If you want to punish that, you got to find that the statements fall under an unprotected category of speech. And that issue has not been addressed.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
It's an interesting case.